in the gospel today says that everyone who believes in him will have life, eternal life. Now, is this life meant to begin just when we die, or is it meant to begin now? It's an important question to ask, because when you look at most Christians, they look slightly dead. They rarely smile, or when they do, they're pretending, because they're trying to be good Christians. Yeah? Are we meant to live this life now? Are we meant to be alive? If we're not fully alive, if we feel like we're walking around slightly dead, then we either need to look harder at the gospel, or we need to ask for our money back. Not that we actually paid for salvation, but if we did, somewhere along the line we've been cheated. We need to look seriously at why is it that we often fall short in this life business, in this promise of life. Just to try and give an analogy, I think explains some of this. The brothers know I occasionally do stupid things which involve doing very long hiking trips by myself in dangerous situations. But anyway, years ago I was hiking by myself. I was doing a pilgrimage walk. And after the first day of walking, I was sleeping on some very rough ground. And there was a little bit of wood, just a little twig, sticking into my knee. And I was so tired, I thought nothing of it. I thought, don't care. It's just a twig. It won't hurt. The next morning I woke up and my knee was just hurting a little bit because this twig had been digging into a little ligament in the side of my knee. And once again I thought, it's nothing. I'll be fine. So I started walking. But gradually as I was walking, this irritation started to get a little bit worse and worse. And without realizing it, I was compensating for this irritation. And so I was sort of favoring that one knee. And as I started walking, other muscles started twisting up. And then my back started to go. And then my feet started aching. All because I was trying to protect this one knee. This one tiny little irritation. I walked about, 45 kilometers that day. And by that time, I couldn't stand. It got so bad, I was determined, just stubbornness runs in my family. But, I was finding any branch I could use as a walking stick, and then one wasn't enough, so I needed another one. I'm basically crawling along the road. Got to the point where I literally couldn't stand. And I was just like this crippled mess on the side of the road. I won't finish the story, but anyway, I got home. But it's always spoken to me, of something of our life, and particularly our life as Christians. Because we've got this promise of life, of, as John says in his gospel, of basically beginning eternity now. It's not meant to be something that comes when we're dead. It's meant to be the fullness of life that we begin now. But somewhere, very early on in the journey, something happens. And it happens to all of us because all of us are human. That somewhere we become slightly wounded. Very often it's just a little wound of love. Someone doesn't love us the way we expect. Or they hurt us, or whatever it is. And at the time we think, it's nothing. Yeah, I'm strong enough. I can brush that off. That we think we can just keep walking. But that tiny little wound of rejection is still there. And gradually, as we keep going, it becomes some sort of lie within us. Something that says, you're not worth it. You're not good enough. Or no one's going to love you. Or no one's going to accept you unless you're perfect. Or unless you're better than them. And as we keep walking, it deepens. And we start compensating. We start acting in ways to try and meet that deep need. The people we try and hang out with, the way we talk, the way we dress, the way we work, all of it's trying to compensate for that one wound, as small as it is. Trying to have people love me, trying to bring the attention in on myself and defend myself It always comes with a fear that if I'm not who I should be, then I'll just be rejected again. If we keep walking without actually addressing that wound, it cripples us. And we find ourselves grabbing hold of more and more things to support ourselves. You know, trying to grab hold of things that we think are going to prop us up. And they just accentuate the problem. And this is why we end up really as Christians in name only. You know, St. Paul's writing here to the Ephesians. And he's saying to them, whatever you do, don't hold grudges. Don't lose your temper. Don't raise your voice. Don't call each other names. Don't allow any sort of spitefulness to be among you. Now, this isn't just a nice little exhortation. This is because they were doing this. Because he knew what was happening amongst this community. They were backbiting each other. They were stabbing each other in the back. Face to face, they were like, oh, you're my best friend. But behind their back, they were finding every opportunity to speak with bitterness and hatred against each other. Why? Because deep down, they were afraid. They were afraid that if I don't do this, I'm just going to be rejected again. If I don't try and defend myself by attacking, then I'm going to be attacked. And it gets so much worse. You know, this is why Christians end up in addictions. Because we're trying to prop ourselves up. You know, this is why the great problem amongst young men is pornography. We're trying to prop ourselves up, desperate for love. Amongst young women these days, the issue is with eating disorders or self-harm. Once again, all coming out of this deep wound. And the whole point is, you cannot heal yourself. Trying to keep walking doesn't make it better. I know that, I've tried. I ended up as a crippled mess on the side of a road somewhere down near Gundagai. But so often as Christians, we think, oh, I'll just try harder. Oh, I'll just try and pick myself up again and keep going. And we spiral downwards and we lose hope. And eventually we get to the point of despair where we think, where's God? Isn't God meant to be giving me the fullness of life? This must just be a load of rubbish. This is why so many Christians lose their faith. We have to come back and acknowledge where it began. And it's begun in all of us. There is no human being on earth who is immune to this. And once we are able to acknowledge and say, yes, that is the deep hunger in me. That is the deep yearning. All of this, all of my life is desperately trying to compensate for this lack of love. Then come to the one who heals. And what is that? You know, Elijah, in the first reading, he's having a pretty bad day. He's saying to God, I've had enough. Take my life. I am no better than my ancestors. He's at this point of despair. And what's God's answer? He makes him a scone. He says, there you go, Elijah. There's some nice scones. Have those. They'll make you feel better. I'd love to have seen what Elijah said to the angel. Because he's thinking, what on earth is that going to do for me? Really? I need some desperate intervention here and you're making me scones. But what this points us to is heavenly food. What this points us to is the Eucharist, and we can have the same response here. We come here full of pain. We come here desperately trying to keep our head above water, and we say to God, what are you going to do about this? And he says, here's a little wafer of bread. Try that. And no matter how much we have of faith, no matter how much we try and convince ourselves of the doctrine of the Eucharist, deep down, somewhere in us, we're having the same response as Elijah. And we're saying, really, have you got anything else? Like, I need something big here. I need something which is really going to change my life. And yet God's response is still the same. Take and eat. Now we need to realize what God is doing here. When Jesus says, anyone who eats my flesh will have eternal life, there are two things happening here. One is a basic statement of salvation, that we come here in communion with his sacrifice, his saving death and resurrection, and it's done. Salvation is yours. There is no more question about it. Eternal life is yours. But there's a very human element to this as well, which is the solution to our problem, where Christ is here before us saying, look at what this actually means. If this is real, if this piece of bread that we hold up before us is Jesus Christ, his body and blood, what does that mean? What it means is that you're loved. What it means is that you're accepted. You are loved by a God who is prepared to shed every last drop of his blood for you. A God who is prepared to humble himself not only to become human, but to become bread so that he can give himself to you. Do you ever stop and reflect on that as you come to the Eucharist? Do you ever stop and realize how much you have been loved? Do you ever allow that love to soak in? Don't just let it be knowledge. Don't let it to just be a teaching of the church. Let it become an encounter with love that breaks through your heart. An encounter of love that comes in to that wound of rejection. So all those lies within you that say, I can never be loved. I'm never worth it. No one can ever accept me. God comes here and proves you wrong. And he says, I give myself. I love you. Let yourself be loved by me. Open your eyes to see what I'm doing in your midst. And let this transform you. This is the only solution to our problem. Self-help groups will not solve it. Getting therapy won't solve it. Continuing and walking, hoping that it goes away, will not solve it. We need to acknowledge that, yes, I just want to be loved. Desperately yearning for someone to acknowledge me and to know me and see that Christ is here in your midst. Realize that this is not God just dishing himself out, not caring. This is God encountering you with every bit of love within him, this passion of love wanting to be poured into your heart. The only thing stopping you from receiving that is yourself. There is no shortage of grace here. It's not as though God gives himself more to one person than to another. The only thing that holds him back is us. Will you let yourself be loved? Will you let Christ come into that place and encounter you there? And then allow that love to strengthen you. Allow that love to transform you so you are no longer needing to be defensive. See, this is the whole point of Christianity. If you have been loved this much, you almost become invincible. You no longer have to spend your life building defenses, fighting for security, fighting to be loved and acknowledged by other people, if you truly know how much you are loved by Christ. This is why the saints were able to love those who hated them. But no matter how much someone swore at them or despised them, they were still able to genuinely love because they had been healed. So often the arguments and the fights amongst us occur because it's one person's wound hitting in on your wound. It's one person's rejection playing off against somebody else's rejection, and we just end up fighting. If you can truly allow Christ to heal, if you can truly allow his love to come in and his truth to speak to you and say, you are worth it. You are worth me doing all of this. You are this valuable. You are this lovable. It starts to change reality. starts to change who we are. It starts to strengthen us. It starts to bring us life. So that we start to realize that, yes, eternal life begins now. True joy, true peace, true happiness, true freedom begins now. Let yourself be loved. That is quite simply the solution. As we come here to the altar, as we come to celebrate this memorial of the death and resurrection, open your eyes and realize God has loved me this much. Allow it to sink in. Allow it to be real. And then as he comes into you, invite him into the pain. Invite him into those places of rejection and say, Lord, give me this life. I need this life. So let's come here hungry. Let's come here aware of our need and not allow this moment to pass us by.